and welcome to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Rowan County Judge Executive Harry Clark. Harry, thanks so much for being here.
Good morning, Leanne, and it's always a privilege to be here to share our information with all the residents of Rowan County.
A lot has changed since the last time we had a chat, and as far as the COVID mandates, the mask mandates, the regulations from the CDC, things that are happening. And I noticed that you made an announcement on your social media this week about the dashboard that we've all been watching since this pandemic began.
We have. A lot has changed, Leanne, since in 30 days, and we're so thankful for it. The COVID numbers continue to decline across the state. So that is always good for us because our numbers obviously go down as well. We have decided that the dashboard, it was really great. We implemented it to begin with to assist the school superintendents and the Morehead State University and just people in general on what the real status was, current status each day. And that was no slam towards the state health department, but you have to remember we can react much quicker. We're smaller. The state had to deal with 120 counties and they had to get those numbers out and get them reported. So sometimes at the beginning, if you remember, the numbers were pretty high and it was hard to get your arms around that. So we started a dashboard just to assist our local folks. And but at times the state was 2 to 6 days behind. So we did it just for a current snapshot of where we were. And now school's out and also the university is out. The numbers are down and we will continue to update our post as we see something that is significant that the folks need to know. We will certainly put that out. But for now we believe and we hope that continues, but we have no longer have a need for the dashboard. And Dylan Lambert did a great job on that. He created it and kept it up. And people really appreciated that. We got a lot of compliments on it. And a lot of people, they set their computer timer on 7:30 because if it wasn't out at 7:30, I'd start getting messages. What happened? Did you not? Mm-hmm. But it was good information.
I know that was something that I kept my eye on during the, especially when you first started doing it. It was kind of one of those things that you checked every day because it, you know, none of us knew what to expect or what was going on, and it really did help keep up with exactly like the most up to date, most pertinent and real information that was available. I know I appreciated it very much.
And of course, you know, with the mask mandate changing, as you mentioned earlier, it's now, if you've been fully vaccinated, which is the definition of that, if you've received your last shot and it's been 2 weeks since then you're fully vaccinated. And if you took the Johnson & Johnson, then you would be fully considered fully vaccinated 2 weeks after that single shot. So the mask mandate has changed that if you have been fully vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. If you have not been vaccinated, they want you to wear the mask until June the 11th. And that date is based on the fact that they have now released it to 12 to 15 year old children. And they want to be able to give them the opportunity, since they never had it in the past, to be able to receive their vaccines. And then after June 11th, unless something changes, then no one will be required to wear a mask. However, individual businesses may elect to have their customers wear their mask and are certainly within their rights to dictate the fact that you need to wear a mask to be in the building. So, mm-hmm. And there's other circumstances, mass transit, airports, hospitals, those kind of settings. You still will have to wear a mask. And also EMS, our folks that are in the that you'll see come pick you up, they will be wearing masks as well because they fall underneath the hospital guidelines as far as medical professional.
And I know it's kind of hard for people to understand that the rules are going to be different in different places. I know that there are businesses, business owners in the community that are kind of still making decisions, waiting to see what the CDC is going to say before they make a final decision.
Yeah, and I think it's just the simplest thing to do is stick a mask in your pocket. We've carried it around for a year and a half. It's kind of habit now. So just stick it in your pocket. And if you come to a business that, you know, and it may be a business that may have someone that's vulnerable there that cannot take the vaccine for some reason, you never know what their reason is. And I'm sure it's a valid reason, and it is a valid reason to them. So you should respect that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, we're probably expecting to see some things change. Has anything at the courthouse changed yet, or are we still waiting a little bit before decisions are made on, you know, if I'm going to come down and see you in your office, what, you know, what do I expect when I come in there?
I have made the same here. I have taken the signs off of the front door that masks are required. We're following the same guidelines as the state has put out. I have left it to the individual offices, the elected officials, if they want to require a mask before you enter their particular, let's just say the PVA or the county clerk or the sheriff's department, they could certainly require that. To my knowledge, none of them have elected to do that. That may change. They certainly are, they are within their rights to do so. But as of now, you can come into courthouse if you've been fully vaccinated, without a mask, and we trust and believe in the people to be honest that if you're not wearing a mask, then you have been vaccinated.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the state of the county. I know everywhere I turn, every drive-through I go through, every business that I visit has a sign on the door now hiring. And the county kind of has been proactive to kind of meet that need for the individual business owners.
We have. We've been very, very active, and Dylan Lambert, Executive Secretary, has created a workforce pool, and that is a pretty simple, short application that you can apply. You can fill out the application, and it's available to all of the businesses and employers that wants to take place or take part in this program. And there is, I will say, there is numerous businesses that are taking advantage of this. We've already had some success with it. We've brought people in and exposed their names to employers, and they have picked them up. So we've already got success stories. We've got a lot of businesses reaching out to us, and it's really been a win right now for everyone. And it's not, we're not trying to take the unemployment office business away from the unemployment insurance folks from the state. We're just trying to assist the folks that may possibly be a little hesitant to go there, because it is one, it's by appointment. And so it may be slow in the process, but this is working out very well. And it's a one-stop shop. We don't give you the job. We're not the employment agency, but you fill out the little application that goes to all the desk of all the folks that are doing the hiring, and they get a look at your quick snapshot of your qualifications. And if they're interested, they give you a call, and then they go through their own interview process. So, but it has been successful at this point.
I think sometimes the state program is a little intimidating. You know, there's a lot of different jobs on that website. If you go on the state's job portal, I don't remember exactly what it's called at this point, but it's been a while since I've looked for a job. But to go on there, it is a little overwhelming to kind of narrow it down, because you may find something that's interesting to you, but you don't want to leave the area that you're currently in. And sometimes there's just a lot of information on there, and that's a little too much for people sometimes.
It is. It's, you know, it's hard to navigate, and especially if you don't have a computer. So we've literally had folks that come in and sit down in the office, and Dylan Lambert has been successful in navigating them through and putting their information in for them. And that actually was one of our success stories. That the guy came in and filled out, had Dylan fill his short application out, and he was hired a couple of days later. The other thing that I think people need to know, you know, even if you're drawing a disability, you can still work and earn so much annually and still work. So, you know, for instance, I don't know any numbers, I'm just going to make numbers up. But if you know, let's say you draw $1,000 a month in disability, well, you can still work and supplement that. So you really have got an opportunity that you can really get ahead. You know, you could still keep your benefits of your disability, and you can still work so many hours and earn so much a year. And you know, you could set yourself up to be able to live a better life without so much worry. So that's one thing that Dylan's capable of doing is walking them through that process. And like I said, it's very successful at this point. We're very proud of it, and we've had a lot of businesses tell us, please keep this going and please grow this because this is something that we need.
Now, speaking of some people who don't have a computer, I know that you've been really pushing for people to conduct the speed test in order to kind of get a good, accurate picture of internet accessibility within the community. How is the county doing on people filling that out?
We did really good. We moved from, number 47, I think, down to 17 in the state, and I haven't got an update this week. I'll get one later in the week, but our broadband test really picked up, and thanks so much for the residents for doing that, because that's the key to this unlock these grant dollars, is they will spend the money where the greatest need is. We certainly have that need. We just need to prove it to them. So when you live in the head of that holler, do that speed test. It's at speedtest.ky.gov. And do the test. If you can't do it at home, you don't have enough internet to do the test, go to your neighbors or go somewhere to the library. And if you all else fails, if you'll call our office at 784-5151, again, we will walk through that process and enter you as no internet available and do a specific address so that they'll know you have no internet at that address. So. Mm-hmm.
And I want to get into the agenda from the fiscal court meeting earlier in the week. But first, I want to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
If you're downsizing and have a vehicle that doesn't run or is rarely used, donate it to the WMKY Vehicle Donation Program. Receive a tax credit and support WMKY programming at the same time. Donating is easy. Just call 855-WMKY-CAR or visit online at WMKY.org. Your used vehicle will be picked up fast and conveniently. Call anytime at 855-WMKY-CAR or online at WMKY.org.
And we're back here on Open Mic here at Moorhead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Harry Clark, the judge executive here in Rowan County. Harry, thanks again for being here. We're talking a little bit about the fiscal court meeting that happened earlier this week. There was a lot of ground covered. I do know that there were some individuals who spoke with the court about the North Fork Mobile Home Park. The TIF district was created in order to kind of help move things along with a new retail and restaurant kind of center being built there, and the land was sold through a private sale. But there's been a lot of heat on the elected officials of the community, both the county and the city, about this sale. But the individuals speaking on behalf of the residents of North Fork were at the meeting earlier this week. So what did they have to say?
Well, first of all, I want to say they were very respectful to us, very respectful to our time. They actually contacted my office and asked to be put on the agenda. They asked for 30 minutes. We gave them the time that they asked for. We actually gave them more time than I had allowed them all to speak. And, you know, a lot of times, Leanne, people want to be heard. And they want to be heard. And if you'll just give them the opportunity to get it out. And I think, you know, some of their stuff, I think they knew, I think they just wanted to bring awareness to it. I mean, I really do. And they did that, and they did a very good job of that. They presented a resolution. As I explained to them, you know, we can't pass a resolution like that. I mean, there's the county nor the city can take any taxpayer dollars and individually give money to individuals. But one thing that they have highlighted, and I brought that up in a meeting yesterday, the TIF is created, and all the language is created in the Kentucky legislation. And it is very difficult. It's very hard to navigate through. And, you know, if that is the case and it's hard to navigate through for folks that I would consider educated, then it's probably written wrong. If you have to get a specialized attorney to help you do this, and that's essentially what had to happen. But it is done at Kentucky legislation session. And what should really happen is they should put a clause in there that if you're working with residents or residents will be affected, meaning homes being moved or whatever, then they should have a time limit in it and not try to put that on the county or the city, because if we dabble in it, we're interfering with private enterprise. I mean, I'm sure there's a whole bunch of lawyers that would get involved in that if we did that. But if they put it in the actual legislation of the TIF, they said it for, you know, so that needs to be fixed at that level. I certainly agree that there should be something there. None of us is real familiar with the TIF. It's very cumbersome, but we heard them out. And, you know, at the end of the day, we believe still that this is a good investment for the future of Brown County and for our kids and grandkids to have opportunities here in the future. So that was our final decision. It's still a good investment for the future. And we really did everything we could to assist the residents. We established Frontier Housing Fund and assisted the residents with moving expenses. The seller provided $1,000 towards the movement of their home. And we all knew that wasn't enough to start with, but it was a place to start. And so we worked through it. And again, they were very respectful, you know, and they're just good, decent, honest folks that were uprooted and they wanted to be heard. And we did that.
Now, speaking of taxpayer money, the fiscal court did talk about the budget for the 21-22 fiscal year, which starts July 1. Let's talk a little bit about where the money is going to be allocated.
Well, our budget is a $15,354,555 budget. It's close to being mirror image to the budget last year that we initially proposed and then pulled back on because of COVID, because we weren't sure of our funding. The largest single item in our budget, unfortunately, is our detention center, and it's a little over $5 million budget. It's $5.2 million budget, and the general fund that we operate the whole county on is $5.3 million. So there's roughly $75,000 difference between how we operate this county and what it costs to operate the detention center. So you see where most of that money is going. Like I said, it's $5.2 million budget. Our road department road funds gets $2.5 million, and the next one is the ambulance fund at $2 million, just a little over $2 million. So you can see it adds up pretty quick, and it's services to the county and services to the community. And a lot of these are essential services. So we try to spread that out as best we can, take care of the employees, and also take care of the taxpayers' dollars.
Now, are there any big changes or anything that's going to be different? I know that one of the things that was discussed was the salary schedule for the county employees.
I wouldn't say it's big. You know, we took last year's cost of living allowance, and we didn't do that last year because of COVID. And then we took this year's cost of living allowance. We combined the two and it came up to 3%. So we put a 3% pay raise in for the county employees. They deserve it. They worked hard even through COVID, but you know, the cost of living increases. We're in competition for workers just like everyone else is. And, you know, it's pretty sad when we got a labor force, you know, that's at the $10 an hour range for labor. So we did move ours up to, I think, $13 an hour for the folks that is the least. And that's not a person that just comes to work in labor, but $13 an hour and 3% pay raise across the board for the employees. And that, again, that's just a cost of living increase. But we have to stay competitive. You know, these guys, take an operator, for example, they could probably go to work. I see advertisements all the time for $36, $40, $50 an hour to operate. So, you know, we're not even close to that, believe me, but we have to stay competitive. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that was discussed was an improvement project proposal at Cave Run Lake. I haven't heard any rumors about this at all, so I'm really interested to hear what was discussed.
Well, you know, it started out, we've worked on this project, and Doug Morgan worked on this project with us. He is a commissioner in Fish and Wildlife in our area. But we've worked pretty close on this, and it actually started out as a ADA fishing pier at Muskie Bend. And from that, there were some extra dollars looked like they were going to come available, but we concentrated on that for, I'm going to say, at least a year, thinking that would be a good project. Well, it is a good project, but U.S. Forestry Service have additional funding come available. So they saw an opportunity for us to partner with Brown County and the U.S. Department of Forestry and to broaden that scope of that project with a lot more money and a lot more bang for it. So I'll run through it real quick. Public boat dock below High Banks and Ranger Station, ADA fishing pier, a restroom and pathway at Muskie Bend, Ramey Creek ADA fishing access rehabilitation. The project involves road repairs and reconstruction of the ADA pullouts for fishing. We're repositioning the courtesy dock at Scotch Creek boat ramp. Shallow Flats ADA fishing access trail and wildlife viewing rehabilitation. Boat gunnel to Scotch Creek Marina ADA fishing and lake access trail. Accessibility improvements at Twin Knobs campgrounds. And it would increase the number of accessible sites. So you can see this is a big project. It's a $585,000 project. But because we're partnering with the U.S. Forestry Service, they will provide all matching funds for the grant. We will simply be the applicant. And we will help them oversee the construction. So this is a win for Round County, for U.S. Forestry Service, and a win for the region, and certainly for tourism. It will really help us in tourism. It's just a great project. So
I know that.
Started.
I know that a lot of people come to the lake, that it's a big draw for the area. I think that's an amazing thing, especially with the ADA compliant options, because it's often when you're enjoying these outdoor activities around the lake or even here in town, sometimes it's hard. You look around and it's like, this is not accessible for everyone.
You're right, Leanne, and this really is geared, if you listened and you did. If you listen, a lot of this is for handicap accessibility, and that will be, it's just good for everyone. But it doesn't matter if it's good for one person. If they enjoy fishing and they're able to fish after this, it's all worthwhile. So it's just a great project. It's a great effort between collaboration between tourism, between U.S. Department or U.S. Forestry Service and Round County.
Mm-hmm. Well, it will be interesting to see, does that project start right away or?
Well, everything takes time, and we're applying for a land water conservation grant. So we passed the resolution to apply for that yesterday, but nothing happens at the speed of heat, but we're looking, I would say probably a year or so down the road before we actually start seeing some hammers and nails.
And unfortunately, that's all the time we have here on Open Mic. Round County Judge Executive Harry Clark, I really appreciate you spending time with us today.
Well, thank you, Leanne, for having us. And, it's always good to be able to communicate to the public. We ask you to please be respectful of the folks that wear the mask. And we know you will. Please keep up the good work. Let's keep the COVID numbers down so we don't have to go backwards in what we're doing. We hope you enjoy your summer. It's going to be a beautiful time, we hope. Weather's on the way. And just thanks, everyone, for being patient through the COVID. And we will talk to you in a month.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Mic. Our show is produced by Greg Jenkins, and our theme music is Turtle in the Creek, composed by Galen Green and performed by The Wooks. Produced by Moorhead State Public Radio with the generous support of listeners just like you. We'll see you next Friday.